Welcome to another Vancouver Island Music Fest podcast. I'm Dan McLennan, and this is David Gogo.
She's always running wild. She's always on the loose. Don't try to keep her tied down, man, because you know it's just no use. Just no use. Behind her, never shed a tear. You put the pedal to the metal, man. She really shift them gears, shift them gears. She walked down the street so slow and lazy. Your stack, and this she said she's leaving, boy, she ain't never coming back, coming back. She's so fine, and I don't mean maybe. Talking about my blue-eyed Daisy.
My name is David Gogo, and I'll be bringing my band, which consists of Jay Stevens on bass guitar and vocals, and Mr. Gordon Grant Baird III, who plays the drums and also sings. And I believe I'll probably be doing some solo shows as well. Whatever's asked of me, I'll do it.
Now, you've played with a veritable who's who of the greats, Johnny Winter, Otis Rush, Albert Collins, Bo Diddley, opening for George Thorogood, ZZ Top, Tragically Hip, Buddy Guy, who we're also going to see at the Music Fest this year, Little Feat, Jimmy Vaughn, and none other than B.B. King. You had an opportunity to open for B.B. King in Nanaimo, your hometown, no less.
Yeah, I've opened for B.B. King three times in my career, and I even got to play on stage with him one time in the early 90s over in Switzerland at the Montreux Jazz and Blues Festival, which was, you know, it was amazing. I was 21 years old or something, and there I am playing with one of my all-time heroes. But the last time I saw him was in Nanaimo at the Port Theater. It was one of these shows that sold out before they even announced it. You know, I think they let the season ticket holders know that B.B. King was going to be around, and it just sold out immediately. And so that was really special because at this point it looks like B.B.'s done touring. And so this was right near the end of that. So it was wonderful to have the opportunity to one more time in my career to open for him. And, you know, in my hometown, my mom and dad were there, my grandparents and my son and my wife and my sisters. And it was just tremendous. And we got to spend a little bit of time chatting with him afterwards, and he's just an amazing person, a very, very special person, and I've been really lucky in my career to hang out with him a couple times.
That must have been an incredible moment. Montrose at 21, that's a privilege to be on stage, but at the same time, you must have felt a lot of pressure as well.
I guess there was a bit of pressure, but I didn't really feel it because, you know, blues musicians in general, you know, as long as you can play and stuff, they're pretty... They're a pretty friendly bunch, you know. It's a group of people that have had tremendous ups and downs in their careers, and you know, a guy like B.B. King is almost like, even when you first meet him, it's almost like meeting your favorite uncle for the first time or something. It's hard to describe, but you know, that particular time it was B.B. King's encore, and he had a whole bunch of people up. So Otis Rush joined us, and Big J. McNeely, and I think it was Ruth Brown. This was a while ago, but they just make you feel welcome.
Oh,
had an incredible career as well. We're looking at 13 albums now, the latest being Come On Down. That, in my books, that makes you a pretty busy guy. What can you tell us about Come On Down? In some ways, this is kind of a journey into the past or a visit to the roots of the blues.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to have a new album out in time for Music Fest, which is kind of crazy. We'll see if we're going to be recording it soon. But Come On Down, you know, after making as many albums as I've made, I was kind of looking for a bit of inspiration in terms of writing. So I decided to take a traveling journey down on the blues trail, starting in Memphis and going through Mississippi. Ended up going quickly over to Arkansas, just, you know, over the Mississippi, over to Helena, Arkansas, and even made it to Muscle Shoals, Alabama. So it was a fantastic trip that I've been wanting to do for some time. I'd been to those areas before, but never with much time to really explore. So in a way, I'm kind of glad I waited, because with technology these days, you can follow other people's blogs. You can even get an app for your phone to, you know, download, and they can tell you all these historical markers and where you want to go and all these amazing historical sites. But I kind of had some really fortuitous timing and serendipity in terms of where I was at the right time, just to kind of get some special treatment as well. So I got to see a lot of the legendary recording studios. Went to Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Got invited at around midnight or 1 in the morning to go down to Royal Studios, which was Willie Mitchell's old studio that is still running, where they did all the Al Green records and all sorts of good soul, and the typical stuff like your Sun Records, Sun Studios, and Stax. It was incredible, though. I mean, to go to these towns that Robert Johnson would sing about in his songs and see them in modern times, you know, a lot of them have changed. Towns that in his day were hustling, bustling towns, where maybe that's where the ferry landed that would cross the Mississippi, and now they don't have a ferry anymore, so these towns are kind of dying off. But there's still these buildings that you can stand right there and stand where Robert Johnson played, and amazing sense of history down there. And as much as I've read about the area and listened to the albums, there's just something about actually being there and breathing the air and talking to the people and eating the food that really, you know, you really soak it up. So it was an amazing experience. And one of the highlights was I went over to Helena, Arkansas, which, same thing, it used to be a rootin' tootin', you know, real party town, blues town. And now the old part, you could blast a cannon down the main street and probably not hit anybody on a Friday night. But they're working hard to preserve what's left of it. And there's a fellow named Sonny Payne who does a radio show 5 days a week for an hour a day or 2 hours a day. I think it's an hour. Anyway, yes, yeah, the King Biscuit Flower Hour, so it would be an hour. But Sonny's been doing the show for 60-plus years.
A classic
show. And he now broadcasts out of a cultural center. So I went there with my lady and met him before the show, and he found out I was a musician, so he asked to listen to one of my CDs. So I ran out to the rental car and grabbed a CD, and he had a quick listen. He goes, "Hey, I like this. I'm going to get you on the air." So he had us both on the air, and he would play a bit of my, well, first he played some of the stuff he'd play normally, but then he played a bit of my music and did a short interview, and then he'd get my lady to read his ad copy. So there she was on the second mic, you know, "Folks, for all your hardware needs, go down to Johnson Hardware here on Main Street in Helena." So, you know, he was 86 years old at the time, and he's still going. So it was just so great to be part of that. And that's just like one small thing we did in one part of the day, you know.
Pretty hard to top the King Biscuit.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because I said to him, I said, "You know, Sonny, how old are you?" He said, "I'm 86. And I said, "Well, you remind me of B.B. King because, you know, you're roughly the same age, but you're still doing what you do because you love it and people want you to do it." And he says, "Yeah, you're right." He says, "You know, I first met Riley back in 49. And I thought, if you refer to B.B. King as Riley, which is his real name, you've been around."
This sounds almost like if the blues could be called a religion, this sounds like a pilgrimage in some ways. I read you even visited Robert Johnson's grave and paid tribute.
Yeah, there's three sites that different people at various times have claimed as Robert Johnson's grave site. So there was kind of late in the evening we went to the first two, but in the morning we got up early because we were kind of pressed for time, you know, because as we kind of had a rough schedule of what we wanted to do, but then we kept discovering all these other things that we couldn't miss. So we got up really early, really early one morning and went to the third site, which just immediately felt to me like it was the real place. And once we read about the history, there's no doubt in my mind that it's the actual grave site. So yeah, it was 8 in the morning, but I just stood there and, you know, I had to, did my pondering and my pausing and reflecting, and I had to go to the trunk of the rental car and grab my bottle of bourbon and poured a little bit out for Bob and had a little swig myself. My gal kind of took a look at me and she's like, ah, that's something you got to do. But, you know, just being in the cradle of that, and by the time we got there, we'd already been to places like Friar's Point, which he sings about in Traveling Riverside Blues, and I actually did one of the things Robert Johnson sings about. I went down to Rosedale with my rider by my side, and, you know, we went to the couple spots that were, you know, supposed to be the alleged crossroads and all that. So by the time we got there, it was near the end of our trip, and it felt good to be there.
Now tell me about the album that was born of this pilgrimage, Come On Down. The title track has a wonderful atmosphere and kind of it felt almost like a temporal shift with that reverb guitar.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's the song that most reflects the trip, and it was an interesting songwriting process. Number one, the lead guitar is played through it's a Gibson Les Paul, but played through a 1938 National amplifier, which I didn't even know they made amplifiers in 1938 because they didn't have a lot of electric guitars. But it's an old amp I bought off my friend Ken Ham. So, you know, there's a certain bite just to that guitar tone and kind of a spookiness.
The kingdom's still standing, but gone is the host. It's hard to travel through here without stirring up some ghost. It seems we've come so far as time slowly passes, but we need to colored glasses. Well, come on down from the hilltop. Come on down. You will see. Come on down to the river. Come on down. Walk with me. Well, come on down from the hilltop.
The lyrics reflect on my experience down there, but it was an interesting process because I wrote the song with a woman named Melissa DeVost, and how it came about was during the trip, I took a whole whack of photographs. Now, nowadays, without film, you know, with digital photography, you tend to click a lot more, you know? And so when the trip was over, I actually said, you know, I want to get prints. I want to get physical prints of these photos because people never do that. You've got all your photos on your phone now or on your computer, and you know, you kind of miss something with that. You don't forget to physically see the photograph. So I went down to London Drugs and I, you know, kind of sifted through and you know, there wasn't a whole lot of waste, but I didn't want to have anything that was too redundant. But anyways, at the end of the day, I had two copies of each picture because I wanted one for me and one for my gal. And I walked in there a couple days later and she goes, are you the guy that ordered the 642 prints? I thought, uh-oh. Luckily, I had a bunch of coupons to save money. But, I mean, we took that many pictures because we had to. So I put together several photo albums. So when Melissa came to my house, she started looking at them and going, what is this? I said, oh, that's the Mississippi trip. So we kind of went through all these photo books and she just kept asking, what is this and where's this location? What's going on here? So through that, she was kind of living vicariously through the photo albums, but it kind of made me re-dig up the experience and re-dig up these memories. And this just the whole cultural thing of being down there too, you know, being a white guy from Canada. And when we were there was right during the last American election. And going from Tennessee into Mississippi, it was scary because it really looked like there was a lot of support for Romney in Tennessee, and we weren't really exactly sure what was going on. So, I mean, of course, a place like Mississippi is known for its history of, you know, racial problems and
Indeed.
Cultural problems. So just digging through those photographs and the experience is where we came up with the lyrics. So it was an interesting process.
So let's do another little bit of time travel. Take me all the way back to David Gogo's first guitar.
I can't remember a time where I didn't either have a toy guitar, you know, or something. I was so young when I wanted my first guitar. I had a little plastic toy. But I remember my folks taking me to a music store. I think it was in Sawasin. We were visiting some relatives, and one of them had some kind of little music shop. But I was actually physically too small to hold a guitar because I remember having the guitar on my lap, and I couldn't see over it. So my folks just got me a ukulele instead just to kind of say, here you go for now, you know. So I didn't really, you know, it wasn't like I became the next hotshot ukulele player or anything. I just kind of had it to make some noise. So, you know, a year or so later, we went down to Fletcher's furniture store in Nanaimo, where they also had, you know, they'd sell records at the furniture store back then, and I had a couple old guitars. So my first real guitar was a Raven, like kind of a three-quarter scale acoustic guitar, and I kind of farted around on that for a while, and then I remember when I was about 9 years old, maybe I got, 8 or 9, I got my first electric, because I had the acoustic for a few years, maybe 6 to 8 or 9, but I remember I had, my parents had me go to summer camp one time. I just hated it. I hated it, hated it, hated it. I even tried to escape. So finally, I just pretended I was sick for the last few days so I could hang out in the sick room and just read magazines. And but I remember getting home and walking into my bedroom, and there was a PV Backstage 30 amplifier and yet another Raven guitar. But this time it was a black Les Paul copy leaning up, and I was just elated. And I played the Peter Gunn theme for about 3 hours in a row.
In my face, you're just like a natural star, baby. You're always grinning in my face. Ah, but once you get what you want, then you're gone without a trace.
Come on down, you've got 6 original tracks and 6 covers. What was the approach that went into that?
I don't think we necessarily had an approach. I've always had fun with cover tunes in the past on my albums. So I'll take songs that you might not think are blues songs and try to turn them into blues songs. On the previous album, Soulbender, we actually covered a Michael Jackson tune that we just turned into a shuffle, but I heard it on the radio. I was just in a coffee shop or something, and it's that song, The Way You Make Me Feel. But I just listened to the beat, and I went, you know, that's a shuffle beat. So we turned it into a blues song, and it's funny because a lot of people, when they first hear it, like I know it's been played on satellite radio and stuff, like they'll listen to they'll just think, okay, this is a good blues shuffle, but they'll listen to the lyric and go, where do I know that lyric? And then when the chorus comes in, they're like, wow. So I try to take songs that you might not typically think of a blues artist covering and trying to make them a blues. The album I'm working on right now, I'm not even really sure if we're going to do many covers because just the writing's coming a lot easier. But there's a lot of great songs out there. And the one thing that when I do cover a song, it frustrates me when I hear someone covering someone else's song. And basically, it's the same arrangement, same key, everything. It's just like they've changed the vocal. And that's almost like, you know, a very expensive karaoke, if you ask me. So, I know with Come On Down, I mean, there was some fun tunes. Just songs I've heard that I've wanted to play and try to put my own twist on them.
I hear Fleetwood Mac and, of course, the Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Yeah, the Atlanta Rhythm Section was a suggestion of my gal. She had heard that somehow. She heard it on the radio, and she kind of like pulled the car over and wrote down what it was and then told me. I said, I remember that song, yeah. So we covered that, and that was fun, especially the first touring I did with Come On Down. For some of the bigger festivals, I took the festival money, you know, a bit bigger of a budget, and we had a couple of background singers with us, a female background singer, so we were able to do some of those songs and make them pretty authentic to how they sounded on the album. So that was cool. And the Fleetwood Mac, it's funny because we ended up with two Fleetwood Mac songs, but they're both Christine McVie songs. And then soon after we covered them, we found out that Christine McVie was rejoining Fleetwood Mac. So I don't know if I was just like the amazing Kreskin and saw that coming or what. But once again, that's like a British rock blues influence. You know, a lot of those British bands, you know, they it's funny how they took American music and brought it back to America, North America. And in fact, on the new album, it looks like we're going to have a special guest play on one track, which is Kim Simmons from Savoy Brown. And that's another one of these British blues rock bands I listened to when I was a kid. So it's kind of nice when you get to meet these people eventually in your career and play music with them.
Now, another track on the albums that stood out for me is Kings. Honest, hard driving, rough, lots of distortion, real electric blues.
Thanks. Yeah, that's becoming one of my favorite songs off the album. And It's one of those ones that we're actually fitting into it a little better now that we've played it for a year or so live. Because sometimes when you first write a song and you get in the studio, you can get a pretty good version. But after you've played it in front of an audience and got more of a feel for it, you know, you kind of sometimes they can improve, you know, with age. But yeah, that's just a good solid, like you say, a good solid rockin' tune. And it's one of the last songs I wrote for the album, I think. But it's also, it's funny because I've played the guitar for a long time, but it hasn't been until the last couple of years that I started playing Gibson Les Pauls, and that's very much a Les Paul sounding song. But I like it a lot. It's one of my favorite ones to play live.
Tell me about your Vancouver Island Music Fest experience. We're practically in your backyard. You're no stranger to the festival. What brings you back?
Well, I actually am a bit of a stranger to the festival. I've only ever played it once. And I think that was about 13 or 14 years ago. But then I think I went another time just to kind of hang out because Doug Somm was going to be there and some people. You know, the thing is that if I'm not playing it, I'm usually out on the road playing somewhere else because summertime for musicians is your festival season. You got to get out there and play for the people. So I'm really looking forward just to getting back because when I first was there, it's been such a long time since I've been back that I know it's grown incredibly and it's so popular. And every year it's an amazing lineup, and I know there's been a few times where I've just wanted to go to be an audience member, but like I say, the next thing you know, you get an offer to play a festival in Quebec or something, and that's where I got to go because that's my job. So I'm just really curious to see what it's like after all this time. And, it's always a diverse collection of artists, but always excellent, excellent artists. So, just because I'm a blues guy doesn't mean I'm not dying to see Lyle Lovett or, certain singer-songwriters or it's always interesting and hopefully get turned on to some new acts that I'm not familiar with.
Indeed. That's one of the great gifts of the Music Fest. When you have so many different acts coming, there's bound to be somebody you have never heard of before or never seen before.
Yeah. As a musician, because we are playing so much, we don't often get to see other bands play because we're off doing our own thing. So it's at these kind of festivals that we finally get to just kind of be fans and get turned on to some new stuff or get to finally get a chance to see bands that we've been dying to see for a long time.
So
That's David Gogo with a song called Bad and Ruin from his 13th album, Come On Down. Look forward to hearing some new tracks from his 14th album, which is still in the works, when Gogo brings his powerful blues and soul to this year's Vancouver Island Music Fest. My thanks to David for sharing stories with us. And of course, my thanks to Juno Award winner Helen Austin and Grandpa Todd Butler for wrapping it all up once again.
We can sit together and watch the show. Oh, in any weather, we'll watch the show here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest.